Hello, and thanks for tuning in to the Hooks Baseball Podcast. I'm JD Davis from the Corpus Christi Hooks, and we've got a great episode for you today. Dan Reiner has an interview with Travis Green from KIII Sports. Then Mike Coffin will talk to Mike Acosta, authentication manager and team historian for the Houston Astros. MC will also speak with Dr. Michelle Hollenbaugh of Texas A&M University Corpus Christi about the psychological challenges we're all facing in this time. I'll wrap us up with a community spotlight conversation with Ashley Ramirez of the Coastal Bend Blood Center. But to start us off, we're going to talk some Hooks baseball with sales manager Kaylee O'Brien. Kaylee, how are you doing today?
Doing great, JD. Thanks for chatting with me.
Absolutely. So how is the work from home process going so far for you and the sales team? How do you feel like everything's going so far?
You know, I think it's going well. Obviously, it's an adjustment. It's a new challenge for us. We're used to working super close in our office and just being able to kind of pop in to each other's little office and chat about things. So it's definitely a new challenge for us, but, and you know, being on the sales team, it looks a lot different these days with so much uncertainty going on, but, we really are using this time to just stay productive and focus on what's important. And so as a team, we're focusing on staying connected and really communicating with each other, and then also, you know, maintaining our personal self-care as well. And so that a lot for us looks like having daily calls and touching base each day with each other, really getting any updates and questions, things that you would normally just have naturally in an office. We have to kind of make that work virtually, but we're doing pretty well on that, and then just staying engaged. So trying to come up with fun things to do, like have some trivia happen during our daily calls, or, you know, this morning we kind of each shared stories about our favorite memories from the ballpark, just to kind of keep our mindset in the right place of why we're here and why we do what we do, even when baseball's not quite around just yet.
It's definitely tough. It's tough for, I think, all the departments. But one thing that that I'm thankful for you guys is being able to communicate with fans one-on-one. You know, on the marketing side of things, we're sending out these big, broad messages and trying to keep everybody informed. But your team is down in the trenches and answering questions and helping fans figure out, kind of navigate these things one-on-one and helping them as much as they can. What's the number one question that fans are asking right now that if you could answer for a bunch of folks, what's the thing that keeps coming up over and over again?
Yeah, folks keep asking. Number one question is, when is the season going to start?
Do you have a magic eight ball? Do you know when it's going to be?
I sure wish that I could look into the future and tell you that. But, you know, just like the rest of the world, I think we're kind of just waiting to see what's going to happen. Obviously, we know our season is delayed. But don't know exactly when that start date is going to be for us. So, you know, right now we're just kind of waiting on word from our partners and obviously following the health and safety guidelines that are coming from all of the health authorities. And so, you know, we're hoping for the best, and we know that as soon as it's safe to do so, we're going to have a great season and we're going to make the most of it.
What about, is there anything specific that you want to relay to Hooks fans out there if they're wondering, you know, maybe it's about tickets they've already purchased, or maybe they're still thinking about, you know, purchasing some tickets for the season, and they've got, you know, maybe something they're planning with friends and family whenever we get through this. Any messages that you want to send out to Hooks fans about those types of things?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are still here to help with anything you may need. So we know that there's probably a lot of questions, whether that's, you know, when the season's going to start or what that looks like for your tickets, or if you should purchase tickets right now, any questions like that. Our full sales team is still here to help. We're not physically in the office, but our numbers still work thanks to technology. So, you know, give us a call. If you have an account representative already, you can give them a call directly. Or you can just call our box office, and that number is 361-561-4665. And like I said, we're here every day, just like it would be normally if we were in the office, to answer any questions you might have. But you know, we're looking forward to a season starting, and we're excited to have all of our fans back at Whataburger Field. So, you know, now more than ever, we need each other and we need our community. Right now, it looks like staying home and staying safe. But when the time comes, we're ready to celebrate with you at Whataburger Field.
Absolutely. We're excited. And again, for those, that's 361-561-4665. That's the same 361-561-HOOK. So you can call that number. Also, one of the cool things that our team is doing now is we have the ability to text fans if they have questions. So if you are a season member and you know your account rep and you're not, you know, you haven't got a text, maybe it's because we don't have your cell phone number. We may have like a home phone or something like that. If they call their rep, will they be able to get their text number in there so they can get text updates as well?
If you have an account rep, if you know who that is, just go ahead and give them a call. We can get your number loaded into our system, and that way you'll receive texts. It's a lot easier way to communicate sometimes for folks. So we'd be happy to do that. And it's just a quick, you know, 5-minute call that we can get you set up with that.
And just so everybody's aware too, I know like it's one of those things where you think, I don't want to sign up and get these spammy text messages or this like mass group. Like these are actual, like we will text you, you know, your sales rep. If your sales rep, Sean is going to send you a text and you can have a conversation back and forth. It's not a computer that's texting you. It's actually your account rep.
Definitely. Yeah. It's a one-to-one text messaging. So, very personalized, and it's just for you. It's just meant to be an easier way to connect than just having to pick up the phone.
Yeah. And so if any questions come up, you're able to text that number and say, hey, I saw this on the Facebook page. What's this talking about? Or I'm missing out on this. How do I get more information? So definitely look into that. Kaylee, to wrap it up, what are you looking forward to most when we get baseball back at Whataburger Field? Is it that, you know, hot dog? Is it a Whataburger? What's for me, it's food, obviously, but what is it that you're waiting and excited for?
Yeah, well, I am very excited for the food, but my answer is going to have to be just opening night. Game has a really special place in my heart. I grew up as a Hooks fan coming to games from the very first season, and so was always at opening night with my family. And over the years, we've made friends. We've lost some family members, and so opening night just always, I think the excitement of getting to see everybody for the first time again and being out at the ballpark, and just feeling that excitement in the atmosphere, and then all of the ceremonies that go along with it. So the first pitch and the moment of silence for those we've lost, it just, it's just something that I look forward to every year. And I can't wait, to hear that play ball for the first time, when that game comes.
Yeah, there is something special about, I think, opening night every year. But it's one of those, like this year, I think we're going to be able to have something extra special. One of those, you don't really realize how much you miss it until it's gone type of thing. And so I know I'm looking forward to it. I know our fans that are listening are looking forward to it. So Kaylee, thanks again for joining us today. We're happy to have you on the podcast. Hopefully we'll get you on again and talk about some more fun stuff in the future as we get started with the season. And I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, JD. We'll talk to you soon.
That was Kaylee O'Brien, sales manager for the Corpus Christi Hooks. And now to pick up the conversation, let's send it over to Dan Reiner.
Thank you, JD. And now on location, joined via Skype by KIIY's weekend sports anchor and reporter, Travis Green. He's on Twitter at It's Travis Green. And Travis, thanks so much for taking the time out today.
Now, thanks for having me on, guys. Excited to be a part of this new podcast you got going here.
Travis, the last time I saw you was actually at Astro Spring Training in West Palm Beach, and my, how things have changed since then. I mean, you know, you look back and where we were when we were working there together, and that was just at the beginning or middle of March. And when you recall just the last couple of weeks and, you know, going back to when we were actually at spring training, that was really when the coronavirus outbreak kind of snowballed, right? And can you walk us through what that time was like as you look back just a couple weeks, what feels like months ago?
Yeah, that was, my gosh, what a crazy time. So, I mean, just a trip down memory lane with you guys, that was probably the most insane couple of days I've had in quite some time. I mean, I don't want to say ever, because my first week in Corpus Christi was my first week on the job, and then Hurricane Harvey came. I think that takes the cake for craziest like week of my life on the job, but this obviously is a very close second. So like, we're leaving, Dan, you'll probably remember, we got on the flight to go out to West Palm really early in the morning. And as we're getting out to spring training, we found out the locker rooms were closed to the media and anybody that was in there. So that obviously was its own challenge. And for me, that's very challenging to do those spring training stories, because I've got all these stories in mind that I want to go there and talk to individual guys. And in the past, you can go up to whoever you want in that time frame and ask them about whatever stories you have. But that changed. So that was a challenge in itself. And then shortly after, the day we're leaving, we found out that spring training, well, baseball in general, was going to be shut down for the time being. And that in itself was crazy to think about. You know, we just did these stories. I know, Dan, you were there with me working on your own hook stories as well. And it kind of makes those stories become irrelevant for the time being. Very strange time to be working. And I remember for me in the media, I got back and I busted my tail to get these stories out, because, you know, we worked pretty hard on those stories to get everything we needed. I'm excited to tell these stories, and I got them done. And at the time, like, our station, we decided, you know, maybe this is something we run once the season gets going. And at that time, it was like, hey, maybe 2-3 weeks from now, they'll pick back up. But obviously, we have now seen what's happened with the coronavirus, and it's gotten further and further away from that opening day, and everything's so up in the air. So it just the biggest thing with this coronavirus pandemic and working in the media, I think, is adapting. We really don't know what's going to happen. Nobody does. The athletes don't know. We don't know. You just kind of, day by day, it's a curveball, and you have to react to it and do the best you can for it. So now I'm at home doing stuff like you guys are getting creative with this podcast. I'm doing the same. I'm trying to find out how to do my job from home and do these interviews. I've been interviewing some people and all that jazz. It's just a very strange time to be working in media in general.
Yeah, well, you bring up working from home, and you've kind of given people an inside look into your apartment on your Twitter feed. But yeah, for those maybe who haven't been following you yet, and again, go follow him. It's Travis Green on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Travis Green was taken, if you're wondering.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're not the only Travis Green out there. No offense. But why don't you give everyone an inside look, you know, paint a picture for what you're working with, what you're dealing with, just because you're not able to go into the studio, correct?
Yeah, no, yeah, we are not allowed to go in. This is company-wide, our company Tegna. I like the approach that my company's taking. They want to make sure everybody is as safe as possible in this time health-wise. So they want no contact with us, basically, while we're doing our job with the outside world. So we do it from inside with the tools we've been given. So typically my day at work is, obviously, I go film stuff. I get interviews I need. I get highlights I need. I'm always out and about. And then I come back, work on my computer, and then rush to the desk when I'm anchoring and, you know, get ready. And that's the whole day's work. But now I don't have that ability to go film stuff and get sound bites and all that. So essentially what I'm doing at home is I have a work computer here. So I do my work from there. And I figure out, I got to get creative. How am I going to find my stories? What's my stories today? So obviously I comb through, is there any national news? And lately that's kind of hit or miss. You know, you got Tom Brady to the Bucks, like, that day, that's some news. There's just random days where there's some news. It's almost always coronavirus related, or there might not be. And when there's not news, you got to get creative, come up with a way to make a segment. Just last night, I came up with the idea of reaching out to the Coastal Bend, see how they're having fun at home in this self-quarantine time, have them send me some sports videos from home, whatnot. That was a big hit. The other day, Jose Trevino is a guy from the Coastal Bend, a John Paul II grad who's now with the Texas Rangers. I interviewed him and got his take on everything here, since he's a local guy, a nice tie into everything there. So you just got to kind of find what to do and make it work. And then my setup here, I've got a camera at my kitchen table. I mean, I know this is all audio, but you guys can see me here. So I already had like a sports little setup, because I'm a sports guy. Obviously, I think it decorates my apartment or man cave, whatever you want to call it, the best it can. So I just set up the camera here on me, and I record my segments for sports from that camera. And for lighting, I've had to get really creative. I don't know if you saw on Twitter, I'm using lamps for my lights. my home lamps. You got to get creative for the lighting and all that, because there's only so much equipment at the station to go around, and you know, I'm trying my best to make do with what I have.
Most people, I think, are working from home at this point, and obviously, if you're not, you're an essential employee. And of course, we thank everyone in the hospital and some banks and food industries that are all helping out. But you know, for us media types, I think that we're all having to get creative in what we're doing, and whether that's, you know, working in your own home office or online, whatever that is, to keep the conversations going, right? Because for us, of course, we want people to be informed about coronavirus. That's the safety and health is number one. But I think for us in the sports industry, you know, for us, it's how do we give back to our community and maybe take people away from the coronavirus concerns for just a couple minutes of their day, you know? And I think that for us at the Hooks, and, you know, JD talked about it on last week's podcast about everything that we're trying to build up and get out there on social and trying to find a good balance of that. And I think that it goes, you know, the same for you. And with that feel good, you know, the feel good story that you had the other night with the local Coastal Bend players and, you know, getting the professionals' perspective. And I'm sure that's going to continue as, you know, people remain holed up for a couple more weeks. So on that topic, I wanted to get your insight on just the coaches maybe that you've talked to on the Coastal Bend, high school coaches. I'm sure you've talked to a couple college coaches at A&M Corpus Christi or Kingsville or wherever they may be. What has their reaction been like?
You know, I personally haven't been able to talk to much yet. I'm about to this coming week. That's actually part of my plan, because for the time I had off there, you know, you headed towards a while ago, I had that time off to work on the spring training stories. And then I had, you know, just for my own safety and everybody else's well-being, I hadn't been out there talking to the coaches much, but I know I have, you know, just interacted with a couple over social media, over a few texts back and forth. And obviously they're all really bummed out, especially our high school coaches. We have, it could even be more, I want to say 4 or 5 legit teams that we would imagine would wind up in the final four of the, you know, of the playoffs. And that really hurts. Like, this is a year, Chris Thompson and myself, before the season got going, we basically said, hey, we're pretty much guaranteed a Corpus Christi area team to be at state. There's so much talent this year, and things getting shut down for those high school guys. I really feel for them, and I really feel for the seniors. Unlike college, where these college guys are able to possibly go back to school, which I know the NCAA is allowing them another year of eligibility. That's the talk. These high school guys, they don't get that. So I really feel for them, especially the seniors. So that stinks to see that. As far as the coaches, and they feel the same way. You know, the coaches are just, they're just bummed, man, because you work so hard for all this time, all the practice, everything leading up to it. And the season really just got going. You were just starting to see these teams get into a groove, and now it's getting shut down. And I know when you were talking about college too, Coach Malone at ANMCC, I know he was bummed because, as you guys know, the Southland Conference Tournament was going to be at Whataburger Field, like right here in Corpus Christi. So that's a real bummer for those guys because, you know, if they get into that tournament, you're at home, a great stage. What better way to build the program than play in the conference tournament right here at home? Just disappointment across the board for all these teams, you know. It really stinks to see.
Yeah, and I think, you know, going off that point, just – looking at some of the teams that you're talking about, you know, the Veterans Memorial Baseball team, which was ranked number one in 5A, and they have a bunch of seniors who are going to be graduating, and the Cal Allen softball team, which was highly ranked, and they had, you know, they had visions of getting back, and Refugio, obviously, with their seniors, led by Jared Kelly, and you're just not going to be able to see if Jared Kelly's going to be able to pull off that state championship before he graduates now, and you know, I think it is disappointing. And another thing, you know, going off what you said of the college level, the waiver that NCAA is granting for them, that, it's a great thing for those seniors who are going to get another chance. But what about the rising sophomores and juniors who maybe we're going to fill in that starting role left by the season? So, I mean, there's a whole trickle down effect.
Yeah.
I think at every single level of sports that, you know, we're all going to have to account for it'll definitely be, when sports does come back at that level, high school and college, I think it'll be a trying time for everyone. I think it'll be something that everyone's going to have to adjust to. It's just something like all the rest of this that no one has really ever seen before.
Yeah, I think you touched on it perfectly right there, the trickle-down effect. And, you know, there's talks right now about the MLB draft and what are they going to do with that? What's going to happen with that? And you said, right here in the Coastal Bend, we have Jared Kelly, a guy that's supposed to go in the top 10. And if there's no draft, does he go to college? And, you know, I think if they go to college, you got to grant guys the ability to leave after 1 year versus if you go to college, you stay 3 years. You know, he's committed to Texas. So obviously that's a possibility for him the whole time. But what happens now if there is no draft? And does he go to Texas if he has to stay there 3 years? Or does he go to a JUCO or something where he can leave after 1 year? There's a lot of ideas that go into this. It's very going to be complicated, but I'm sure they'll figure it out once this coronavirus pandemic is kind of passed. I mean, obviously this is all kind of on the back burner until that time comes.
Well, Travis, thank you so much for joining us here today, and we'll continue watching your coverage of everything that's going on in the sports world in the Coastal Bend and in our area as things progress here. And, you know, we look forward to watching you. KIII, Channel 3 or Channel 5, depending on which provider you have in the Coastal Bend.
ABC. Thank you so much for having me on, guys. I'm glad I could join. And, hey, I love the idea. If you have more pods and you want me on, let me know. I'm there.
Swung on, has one driven to right center field, going far at center field to win. Let's see, he's over. A beautiful, spectacular running catch, ladies and gentlemen. That's the greatest catch I believe I have ever seen. Listen to the crowd.
Jimmy went on third. Here comes Wynn all the way on this one now, and it's a steal at home. Jimmy Wynn has stolen home. Well, that's the first one for Wynn. The first time in his National League career that he has stolen home. The pitch was high to Ellis, and by the time Haller got the ball down, Jim was in safely with a steal at home.
Jimmy Wynn, the batter, with a count of one ball and two strikes. Wynn swings and drives deep into left field. Look at this one go, everybody. Up to the scoreboard. It's over the scoreboard, bouncing up onto the freeway. I can see it up there where those automobiles are going. Look at that drive.
Wynn now with 72 runs batted in, 24 home runs. There it goes, deep into center field, way, way back goes Matty Alou, and that ball is in Astro orbit. Oh, did he hit it. To straightaway center field, it is 457 feet, and Wynn hit it over that point in center field. A three-run home run is 25th of the year. And the little dynamo, the toy cannon, now has 76 runs batted in of the year. What a shot.
Here's the pitch. Swung on, drive up the middle, and Wynn cuts over. I don't believe he can get it. He does. He makes a miracle grab, close to first base, double play. Fans, you would have to be here to see it, to believe it. Listen to the roar of the crowd. There was one of the greatest plays ever made in the world-famous Astrodome.
Those epic calls made by Lowell Pass, Gene Elston, and Harry Callis are coming to you courtesy of AstrosDaily.com, a must-visit for Astros fans. Hello, this is Michael Coffin speaking on the Hooks Baseball Podcast. Our next segment is about the true generator of those highlights, the late, great Jimmy Wynn, who passed away last Thursday at the age of 78. One of the true superstars for the Astros and the first bona fide slugger in Houston Astros history. Also led the league in walks a couple of times as well. So a well-rounded athlete and a tremendous center fielder to boot. And to talk about the impact that Jimmy Wynn has had on the Houston Astros and will continue to have, we chat with the Astros team historian and authentication manager, Mike Acosta. Mike, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you having me here.
Obviously, we wish it was under better circumstances with the passing of Jimmy Wynn. You knew him personally. I wonder, when someone mentions the toy cannon, what comes to your mind initially?
The first thing is smile. I mean, Jimmy, every time I saw Jimmy, he always was smiling. He always had that look like there was something new to say. He was happy to see you. And, you know, hey, there goes my friend. You know, that type of impression. He was always very positive. And his voicemail, was the same way. I remember sometimes when I would give him a call and get his voicemail, you know, there would be a psalm that he had recorded for the day.
Wow.
And it was just very, very cool. I mean, he was just a very positive person. So when I think about when I would see him, it was always a smile.
An inaugural member of the Astros Hall of Fame, had his number retired, the number 24, in June of 2015. And he was around the organization, an advocate for the Astros, the community. And it seems like to me he really understood his place in franchise history and understood, more importantly, what to do with that type of power.
He did. I mean, he really understood. He was a very, very big picture, like some of our other icons that we have that are retired for the Astros, who know the impact. They've transitioned from being a player, you know, from having a game day face, from having the daily prep of a game, to where they've gotten a bigger picture of life and how the game affects not only them, but also the fans and just kind of how the industry works in general. And so he fully had a grasp on that. And you're right. He had really just become an icon at Minute Maid Park. It's funny because, you know, his playing days were over, you know, in 1973 with Houston in the Astrodome. He played a solid decade for Houston. And many, many fans, you know, knew him, of course. He had 1,200 hits with Houston before moving on throughout the rest of the 70s and then, you know, retiring. But he was just as much of an icon at Minute Maid Park in engaging young fans and older fans because he was there. I mean, you would find him in the Crawford boxes out there in left field and, you know, just or down the in the club level or something. I mean, he was always there and he was always talking with fans and he was always very engaging with people. So his post his retirement career to me was just as important. I mean, he really, really enjoyed talking with people and he understood what the toy cannon meant to fans who even the ones who may not have seen it, because, you know, there's just like you and I, we talk about some of our favorite players from years past and maybe we introduce them to our kids. You know, he understood that and welcomed it. And so he was always just a really great ambassador for baseball.
Chatting with Mike Acosta, the Astros team historian, you mentioned the nickname the Toy Cannon, and obviously it helps to be an icon when you have such a cool nickname like that. From what I've read, he wasn't a huge fan of the nickname initially, but came to embrace it later in his life and later in his playing career. Can you give us the backstory on how he was named Toy Cannon?
He was a guy, obviously, who had a lot of strength in his legs. He had a lot of great bat speed. He could turn on a pitch, and he hit it for a lot of power in the Astrodome, right? He played most of his career with Houston in the Astrodome, where you don't have any wind to kind of help you carry the ball. So this is a guy who was hitting tape measure shots across the league, you know, hitting the home run, the famous home run at Crosley Field that cleared the 57-foot high scoreboard, bounced onto a nearby interstate. He hit one that went about 460 feet over Forbes Field, center field, hit one into the upper deck of the Astrodome, which is about 130 feet or so, maybe 135, 140 feet off of the ground on the seventh level in left field. So he was just hitting all for all this power, and he was given the nickname by a writer from the Houston Chronicle and you know, the toy cannon, because he was a small guy, you know. And he really didn't like that at first because he just felt that he never really wanted to be compared to anything. He just wanted to be Jimmy Winn. That's one of the stories that I heard directly from him. And it ties into the story where he was given number 24 by the Colt 45s back before the Astrodome opened. And they wanted him, they could see the talent that he had, and he did not want to be compared to anything else. He did not want to be compared to Willie Mays because he was given number 24. He didn't want to be, you know, labeled a toy cannon because he just wanted to be able to go out there and do what he did. But he did embrace it as time went along. And I think this was one of the early signs of what was to come, like what we just talked about, in retirement, where he kind of saw the big picture and he saw how people embraced it. And it wasn't anything in a negative way. It was something that, that was, you know, it's very positive. It was, and it wasn't like it wasn't true. I mean, he was a small guy who was hitting for power. And so baseball, you know, you hear the nicknames, you know, throughout baseball, you know, like the Mick, you know, or anybody else, you know, all these wonderful, the Babe. And so he embraced that and really, really took it along and just carried it for the rest of his career. But at first he was a little hesitant because Jimmy really, you know, his work ethic was so strong, and he wanted to be there for his teammates, his game day prep, you know, to make sure he had a good game, you know, every time he had a chance. He didn't want anything distracting from him. And I guess that's also, you know, as we know from different young players, they don't want anything to take away from what they feel might prep them on the field. But as he settled into his career and got that nickname, he just accepted it, and it was perfect for him. And it's good that he accepted it way before 1970, because then we would have had that toy cannon painted on that upper deck seat in the Astrodome. So you know, it was good. I mean, he had a big picture mind about everything.
Chatting with Mike Acosta from the Houston Astros, and we're discussing Jimmy Winn from 1965, Mike, to 1973 with the Astros. Winn posted a 135 OPS plus. OPS plus kind of factors in the league average. It factors in different ballparks. And what that tells you is that Winn was 35% above average for the players that were playing at that time. Throughout that entire span from 65 to 73, averaged 23 doubles, 24 home runs, 75 RBIs, and 19 steals to go along with 88 walks. Really the complete package. Can you put into context the production that the toy cannon had, given the fact that he played half his games at the Astrodome, a very difficult park to hit in?
Yeah, I mean, really what I always tell everybody, if you look at the progression of the franchise, Jimmy Winn, he was the first power hitter of the franchise. He was the first homegrown star of the Houston Astros and Houston Colt 45s. He was a guy that came from Cincinnati, but he was molded in this franchise's system.
Let me stop you right here, because he made his debut in July of 63. But to start the year in 63, after coming over from Cincinnati, as you described, he hit .288 with 16 homers, 49 RBIs in 78 ball games in the Texas League for the San Antonio Bullets. I just wanted to say the name San Antonio Bullets because they loaded the Colt 45s. That's pretty cool back then. But continue, Mike. Go ahead.
It is. That's really cool. And it's of course, a sign of the times, you know, that we probably may not see again. I would hate to say we will never see again, but that was a very cool thing.
That's one of my favorite nicknames.
That really was. But going back, you know, Jimmy Winn wrote all of the original offensive records. He was the guy. You kind of think with a young franchise, you might see a more of a mixture of a bunch of guys. But Jimmy was the one who clearly stood out. It was Jimmy Winn, that Jose Cruz, who kind of rewrote a lot of those records eventually, you know, but in the 80s. And then Bagwell and Biggio kind of obliterated most of everything when they came on to the scene in their careers. But Jimmy Winn really set the standard. He was at the top of all the offensive records for Houston when you got to about 1971. I mean, even before he was done playing here, before the trade that you know, kind of infamously took him away from the Astros. He was a great base runner. I mean, you talk about great hitters, but you also talk about smart base running, aggressive base running. You know, one of the smartest base runners that Houston has ever had was Jeff Bagwell. Another example of a power hitter, but who was very smart on the bases. And Jimmy Winn was very much like that. And maybe not given as much credit for that, because, you know, his power overshadowed everything else. But very, very good on the bases, a good, keen ball player. Had good instincts, and he just, like you said, a complete package, no doubt, was he like that.
to illustrate your point, in his breakout year in 65, he had 22 home runs, which was a quarter of the Astros team home run total. But he also swiped, Mike, 43 bags in 47 attempts. So he knew when to pick his spots, and he picked them quite often.
He did, and he was just a great run producer. You know, he scored a lot of runs. He put himself in a position where his teammates could knock him in. And like I said, he was just a good overall ball player who saw the big picture. And I think, you know, that's something that a lot of the great players throughout baseball, throughout the years, no matter what decade you're talking about, the guys who have a big picture mind, who can simplify the game enough in their head to where they can just let themselves be the ball player that they are, the very talented person that they are out there on the field. There's no doubt in my mind that's what he was like.
Speaking with Mike Acosta from the Houston Astros, talking about Jimmy Winn, who passed away last Thursday at the age of 78. Winn was the first Astro with a three-homer game, Mike, as you well know, June 15th, 1967, against the Giants. What stands out to me about that, the next Astro, Mike, to hit a home, to have three home runs in one game in the Astrodome was Jeff Bagwell in June of 1994, a game that I was at, by the way. But that was 27 years.
Yeah, you know what? I was at that game too. So we were
really
both there.
How about that?
I was sitting out there in the mezzanine, down the kind of towards left field, kind of third base side, and I saw Bagwell launch all those home runs, and it was incredible.
Against the Dodgers.
To see that. Yeah, it was incredible. You know, Bagwell, that first year that he was the MVP, he just was on fire. I mean, he really, really found his groove and took off. And you know, a lot of the home runs that Bagwell hit, too, I know we're talking about Jimmy here, but you remember a lot of those early home runs, really, when Baggy was hitting home runs to the opposite field, that's where you knew he was hitting the ball really well.
Yeah.
His power was really to the opposite field, to kind of the right center field alley. If he had him there, then, man, you could tell he was really seeing the ball. If he threw a double into the gap into right center, you knew that he was really seeing the ball well.
For Winn in 67, he clubbed 37 home runs, second only in the National League to Hank Aaron, who hit 39, also fifth in RBIs and runs scored. The 37 dingers was an Astros single-season record until Bagwell belted 39 in 1994. And for me, you look at all these numbers in context, because I didn't get to see him live, but for the bulk of his career, he played on teams that struggled during his Astros tenure. The club only won 46% of its games in those early years with the Colt 45s and the Astros. And I wonder if he played on a better team or on the East Coast, if he would have earned more national recognition.
Well, definitely. I mean, and just to kind of throw an extra note in there real quick on the 1967 home run totals for him, Hank Aaron said that had Jimmy Winn not played half of his games at the Astrodome, he would have hit more home runs than him.
Sure.
And they were in that home run race, and Hank Aaron said it himself. And he believed that Jimmy was just on fire. And Jimmy was on fire that year. You know, and that was a huge amount of home runs to hit, a combination of in the Astrodome and on the road. But you got something that I think is you hit the nail on the head is, you know, had Jimmy Winn not been playing for the Houston Astros, who were, you know, in 1967, 5 years old, in their sixth season overall, a very young franchise, a franchise that had not had a winning season yet. They didn't have their first 500 season until 1969. So
690 loss years to open up the club's tenure.
Yeah, just a lot of losing. So you're talking about a guy who's having a great impact on a team that's trying to find their way. I mean, they had some guys that had production, you know, Bob Aspromonte, the Al Spanglers of the world, the Rusty Staubs of the world, the Joe Morgans that were there, but they had some instability with the roster and some changeovers, some new guys that came in. So, you know, he was kind of the mainstay there. But if he had been, say, you know, as Mickey Mantle, right? So Mickey Mantle was injured in 1965. He almost didn't play in that first game against the Astros when the Astrodome opened on April 9th of 65. But they wanted to have him there because he was such the iconic player, and they wanted him to take the first pitch of the game and actually bat leadoff. If Jimmy Winn had been a guy who was in the Yankees system and had come up and had been somebody who was going to take over his outfield position, he would have been way, way more popular. Even back in the 60s, even in a time period where we didn't have all the social media, you know, you had the game of the week type thing, but you know, a powerhouse franchise, you know, because of the players that they had and the history that the Yankees had even at that time, he would have been a lot more popular. He would have gotten a lot more attention. He may have been called the next Hank Aaron. You know, who knows if he would have gotten the toy cannon nickname, you know, with somebody else. But I'm just thinking on the biggest scale, on the biggest example possible, you know, he would have definitely got a lot more attention somewhere else. And, you know, who knows if he had had a chance to win a World Series somewhere else even sooner. I mean, obviously he wound up with the Yankees later in the 70s. As an Astros person, you know, you kind of don't want to think about him going, you know, to having his career in the 60s with somebody else. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. If he had been with another powerhouse team, you know, even the Dodgers in the 60s, or the St. Louis Cardinals in the 60s, you know, he probably would have garnered more attention than being with a young franchise, you know, the only team in Texas, the only team in the far South. And it would have been a little bit different.
Mike Acosta, the Astros team historian, is here with us. Mike, before we let you go, I'm going to put you on the spot one final time. Do you have a favorite Jimmy Winn story?
There's so many. I've been lucky enough to have been able to sit around with people who have come through the Houston franchise at different levels, whether it's a broadcaster or front office or a player. I've met every impactful player who is still living or has been living as I was, you know, working for the franchise, and had some opportunity to talk with people. And so one of the things that really interests me is learning what it was actually like as a person to go through a time period. I mean, we all know what Jimmy Winn did on the field. You know, we know what his stats are. We can look at the media guide. We can look at the highlight reels and listen to to Gene Elson and Lowell Pass call the plays. But I like to understand what it was really like being someone in that time period. And Jimmy and I had a lot of conversations about the different challenges that were there, the different concerns that he had over the years. And I'm not sure if he had those conversations with everybody, but he gave me a really good understanding of how things were in that time period, where I almost feel like mental. I mean, my earliest games, you know, I was a toddler in the late 70s. And so I remember going to the Astrodome, and that's already beyond the time where Jimmy played here in Houston, right? So, you know, being able to sit down with somebody like him and kind of get an understanding of what it was really like. I mean, he would tell me stories of walking into the Astrodome for the first time. And he was a very big champion of the Astrodome surviving past its baseball years, because he felt that the Astrodome was more than a baseball stadium. It was more than any type of football stadium or concert venue. He said it was so important to the city of Houston, and it was so impactful, and all the work that went into it, being the first of its kind. And you hear, you know, again, the stereotypical descriptions of the Astrodome, but he was such a champion of that building, and I've been involved with trying to redevelop it, and I work with the Astrodome Conservancy with that. And he was, every time I showed him some ideas, and I said, Jimmy, what do you think of this? Do you think that this would work? Is this kind of the same spirit of you know, what was there? Do you think this would have a wow factor? This would, he just lit up and gave me a lot of ideas and just really was excited to be involved with that. So that's one of the things that I remember. He was somebody who gave me a relation to where I could somewhat relate to somebody who was there in the 60s, who went through the challenges in the 60s. I know that Houston was, I want to say, the most easily integrated cities from in the segregation days, when Hoffines desegregated. I'm talking about Judge Boyd Hoffines when he was mayor, before he was owner of the Astros. in helping to desegregate the Houston in a very peaceful and an overnight fashion, where they just basically took down all of the signs that you used to see in the segregation days. But Jimmy also faced some challenges there with the team, with some of the personnel that had an older, let's say, an old school way of thinking in how they grew up, and him and Joe Morgan, and you know, people who are listening to this, they can go out and they can research that a little bit more. I don't want to delve into that, but Jimmy also gave me an eye opening. If you read his book too, he detailed it in there. That was something that was very eye opening and very human. And the challenges that he went through. And then the other thing that I think about too is he was always, and I think most people, a lot of fans, he used to say, you know, when Minute Maid Park opened, and of course it was Enron Field at the time, but when the new ballpark opened up downtown for the Astros and he walked in there, he used to say a lot. He goes, if I had played my career in this ballpark,
forget
I would
about
have
it.
Hit 50 home runs every year. I would have been the home run team. And, you know, he probably, the way that whips over there at Minute Maid Park, I know early on it was kind of known more as a bandbox. And I think, you know, over the last 20 years, the pitching has adapted to that, you know, to that ballpark. I mean, we still see a lot of home runs to left field. But you know, who knows what he would have done. And he used to joke around a lot and say that that he would have definitely hit a lot more home runs at Minute Maid Park than he did in the Astrodome.
Well, Mike, this has been an absolute treat. We really appreciate your time today. And for all those who are absolutely dying without baseball, like most of us, Mike's a tremendous resource on Twitter at Astros Talk. Really does a nice job of uncovering and redistributing images from the Astros past that get you in the mood for baseball once it begins. Again, Mike, thank you very much for being here, and look forward to chatting with you sometime soon.
Yeah, Mike, I look forward to seeing you sometime here this season, and really appreciate you having me on.
Our program continues with a conversation about the challenges of social distancing, particularly with young children and their parents. And to help us tell that part of the story is Dr. Michelle Hollenbaugh from the Department of Counseling and Education Psychology at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Dr. Hollenbaugh, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We know this is a difficult challenge for us, right, to socially isolate. We do this, and it's a challenge because, you know, we know the consequences of it. We know it's at stake. However, young children don't have this luxury. What are some of the things that we can do to help them adjust during this difficult time?
Sure. And I actually think the big piece, the big takeaway is that, you know, all kids are different. All kids cope differently. So there may be some kids who are having a really tough time, who are anxious and scared. There may be other kids who are doing fine and are happy to be home with their parents. And so I think the big piece is to remember that. And also, as parents, it's good just to check in with the kids, ask them how they're feeling, ask them about things that made them happy that day and things that made them sad that day. And so that way the parent can get a good idea for where the kid's at. And then the other thing is knowing that kids manage their emotions differently than grown-ups do. So when a kid is sad, sometimes that can come out as anger, or you might notice your kid having more emotional outbursts, things like that. And that all can be very common in just them trying to process the change.
Chatting with Dr. Michelle Hollenbaugh from Texas A&M Corpus Christi. I have a 3-year-old. And it's tough for me to explain some complicated things to him. What are some of the tips that you have for parents to, when they talk to these kids about these big picture items or things that might be a little more complicated, how do you get them to understand as best they can?
Well, I think part of it is seeing what they want to know, right? So sometimes we get caught up in wanting to explain all kinds of things that we maybe don't have the answers to, and instead kind of asking them questions, what they know about it and what they want to know, and then really sticking to the things that we do know that can be a comfort. So we're staying home so we can stay safe and so that other people can stay safe, you know, and we're in this together and we're going to get through this together. Those kind of things that you know are true that can be comforting.
Well, we're all staying at home, and one of the sentiments that you certainly get when you look at social media or you talk with your friends and your family, the new appreciation they have for teachers and making sure that students and kiddos are engaged constantly throughout the day and getting the all the information they need to grow and mature and have fun. And one of the challenges for us as parents is, you know, we're still trying to get a little work done throughout the day, but at the same time, we don't want to ignore the kids. What are some of the tips that you have for making sure that we can engage them and it's not just playtime and toy time constantly while the parents are working?
Well, I think one of the things that parents can try to do, one is make sure that as a parent, we're taking care of ourselves, right? Because if we're not coping well, we can't necessarily help our kids cope well. It's like when you're on an airplane and they say, put your mask on before you put others' masks on, right? So
good
making
call.
Sure you're taking care of yourself. But the other thing is also, if we are modeling good coping skills, good emotion regulation, then the kid will pick up on that as well. And so that can be helpful for them. One of the things that I've kind of been looking at is just in general saying, okay, so even though I'm physically present with my kid all day, how can I be emotionally present with them? And so we, you know, a lot of parents are trying to work from home, right? So they maybe can't be emotionally present all the time, but really trying to find a small piece of the day where they can just sit down and be with their child and just listen and just hear them and just reflect. You know, if they talk about being sad or scared or confused or angry or frustrated, and just saying, hey, I hear you and I'm with you.
Well, you bring up a good point about working from home. Is it helpful to set aside some times throughout the day, whether that's around lunch or whatnot, where you put the computer away, you put your work away, and you just have family time?
Yeah, absolutely. And in general, just having a schedule. You know, kids thrive on having a schedule and knowing what's coming, right? And there's been a lot of change. So having a schedule and being able to be flexible, right? So I have a friend who runs a daycare, and she kind of said, you know, what I do is I have my schedule, and then if they're really into an activity, I say, okay, let's keep doing it. And if they get bored, then we move on. And so being able to be flexible, but also having some different activities scheduled. And I know that there are a lot of resources online and parents kind of posting different ideas and things that people can do. But I think I also would want to say to parents to give yourself a break. You know, this is hard, you know, and we're doing the best we can.
Chatting with Dr. Michelle Hollenbaugh from Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Before we let you go, are a few good resources for parents that might be able to check out how their kids can interact digitally or how they can create some activities to keep the youngsters busy at home?
The American Counseling Association, counseling.org, has some really good resources. And also, I know the CDC has posted some really good stuff. And so there are a lot of organizations that are posting resources. I think counseling organizations, the Texas Counseling Association has also posted a lot in the Association for Child and Adolescent Counseling. So going to some of those bigger organizations as opposed to maybe finding things posted on social media that you don't know where it's coming from.
Dr. Michelle Hollenbaugh from Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Dr. Hollenbaugh, thank you very much for being with us today, and we look forward to chatting with you down the road.
Okay, thank you so much, and take care.
JD, back with you, and I'm now speaking with Ashley Ramirez of the Coastal Bend Blood Center. Ashley, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, JD. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So can you give us a little background? What's the overall status of the Coastal Bend Blood Center right now? How are things going? And with the current pandemic outbreak, and just what's everything like at the Blood Center right now?
You know, right now we're doing okay, JD, thanks to our amazing community partners and our, you know, our wonderful caring donors. We are okay right now as far as our blood supply. So, our, you know, our main mission right now is just to make sure that we maintain that blood supply. So that is why we are encouraging all healthy and well donors to please come out and continue to support the Blood Center and to continue to save lives in our community, because, you know, blood is essential in our everyday lives. So it is extremely vital that we continue to maintain that healthy and sufficient blood supply on ourselves for our local patients and our hospitals.
I saw on your website that the goal, I guess, on a daily, you have to have 150 people must register to give blood each day just to kind of maintain those levels. Can you elaborate a little bit on maybe how that number, you know, how you guys get to that, or why it's so important that that number stays so high on a daily basis?
Sure. So a lot of people may or may not be aware that blood has a certain shelf life. So, you know, for example, whole blood is only good for 42 days. So that's why it's extremely important that, you know, donors continue to donate on a regular basis. You know, donors can can donate whole blood every 56 days, which is four times a year. So that is why, we have to have that certain amount of blood supply every single day because it has a certain shelf life. And again, we are the sole provider of our community, you know, our blood supply here in the Coastal Bend. We service 10 counties and 19 medical facilities. So that is why, again, we just try to inform our community residents why it's so important and why we need some, you know, a certain amount daily because we have to maintain, you know, sufficient amount of blood supply.
You talked about it, that it is completely safe right now. For those worried, you know, about social distancing, worried about staying at home, what precautions have y'all put in place to keep everybody safe through this process?
You know, there's absolutely nothing to worry about when it comes to donating blood. You know, the representative of the FDA put out a statement that, you know, there's no fear in donating blood. If anything, this is when you're needed more. When we have these, you know, huge health crises going out in the world, this is when we need our donors even more. And that is exactly what's happening now. He stated that it is very unlikely for respiratory viruses to be transfused through blood donations or transfusions. So it's highly unlikely that it will be transmitted. So there's absolutely nothing to worry about. Our staff is, you know, again, we are FDA regulated, so we have to abide by specific guidelines. And so we always have, and, you know, we always will, especially during these times. You know, all of our staff members are wearing, you know, the protective gloves, social distancing, you know, et cetera. So there's absolutely nothing to worry about. If anything, right now, in order to maintain and make sure that we are practicing social distancing, we are encouraging our residents to please schedule an appointment right now.
Awesome. You've won me over. So now we know, okay, we want to go donate blood. Where do we go to do that? How do we schedule an appointment? What's the process look like right now?
Super easy. All you have to do is you can log on to any one of our social media sites. It has the information on there. You can log on to our website as well, www.coastalbendbloodcenter.org. Or again, we're on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And then you can also give us a call at 361-855-4943. So there's you can also text us as well. You can text a point to 999-777. So there's multiple ways you can book your appointment today. Super easy. So and again, you can find all that information on our social media sites or our website.
That sounds fantastic. Anything else that you want to share with our fans, our listeners today?
You know, we just want to give a huge thank you to our community for stepping up during this difficult time. I mean, without you guys, we would not be able to continue to save lives without each and every one of you guys, our community partners, our media partners. You know, for example, you know, what you're doing right now, JD, with our Corpus Christi Hooks and, you know, helping us get our message out. We would not be able to continue to save lives without each and every one of you guys. So we just want to shout out each and every one of you guys and a huge thank you to everyone.
Well, we appreciate you coming on and talking to us and filling us in. You know, I think everybody right now has so many concerns and so many things that they're focused on that it's really easy for us to overlook this really vital resource for our medical community here and everything that y'all do. So thank you for working hard and keeping the word out there so that we know where we can go and how we can get involved. And hopefully we'll see some Hooks fans out there soon.
Yes, of course. Thank you again so much. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, Ashley. That wraps up today's episode. Thanks for listening to the Hooks Baseball Podcast. We want to thank all of our guests for joining us today. Travis Green, Mike Acosta, Dr. Michelle Hollenbaugh, and Ashley Ramirez. Let us know what you think. You can find us online at CC Hooks on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We would love to get your feedback on the show. You can find all things Hooks Baseball at cchooks.com. For Mike Coffin, Dan Reiner, and all of us at 734 Eastport Avenue, I'm JD Davis saying adios and thanks for listening to the Hooks Baseball Podcast.